Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Mentally Chill podcast. It's your host, Kristen Carney. And I'm curious, what are you wearing right now or not wearing? The reason I'm asking is because I'm in the same sweatshirt that I've been wearing for about a month since I've been home. And I've only changed it when my brother and sister are coming over so that they don't see me in the same sweatshirt and think I really have massive problems and that things are really going awful. I mean, they're not going great, but I don't want them to think they're going as badly as my depression uniform would indicate. So yesterday I changed out of my typical go-to sweatshirt and put on a red sweatshirt. I got very fancy. And then I put on jeans, but I did not put on like jeans I would wear if things were great. I put on baggy jeans, but they were jeans. They were an upgrade from the sweatpants that I've been wearing. And before I started taping this, I thought to myself, you know what? I should change my, I hate to say outfit. It's not an outfit because it's my depression uniform, but I should change my clothing into something more respectable so that my mind frame would be different while recording this intro. But alas, I didn't. And to top it off, I am wearing fingerless gloves because it's getting cold. And since I've been in Southern California for 10 years and I'm not used to anything below 70, I'm very cold in my house right now. And so I look like a bum. And I took my dog out for a walk and put on a beanie. I don't know. It's like 65. It's not cold enough for a hat, but my, you know, having a bad hair day, not having any makeup on, being in the bad outfit, threw the beanie on. I've got my fingerless gloves, was in sweatpants. I thought if people see me, you know, I'm in a small town and people will, you know, go, oh, I saw Kristen Carney and she doesn't look like she's doing well. And then rumors spread. I mean, no one cares that much about me. No one's talking that much about me, but I don't look great. I have not looked great lately. I'm not putting any time or effort into my clothing, my hair, my makeup, my presentation, my nails, nothing. And I think it's really affected me. And I need to start stepping up my game of even lounge clothes. And if anyone knows of lounge clothes that are comfortable, but don't also make you look homeless, let me know what they are. And actually, recently, I was sitting out back at my parents' house in a robe, in silence, looking like I was actually on the grounds of a mental hospital. And I mean, I guess the step up from a robe is my depression uniform, but it's not shallow to focus on your outside because I do think it reflects your inside. And so I think step number one for me, I need to get better lounge clothes. That's baby steps, because what really I should say, I need to just be dressing like an adult and put on actual human clothes, but that's a big step. That's a giant step. That's step four for giants. So baby steps, find nicer lounge clothes so I don't feel so scuzzy. I think it will really help my mental state. And I think I need to, when I wake up and I'm not going anywhere, I need to put on a little makeup anyway. And it's these little steps that make a difference. And this website my friend Dan sent to me can really help with some of this stuff that we neglect when we're not doing well. And this website is so awesome. It's called youfeellikeshit.com. And what it does is essentially take you through all these small self-care things that you seem to not be able to do on your own. The littlest, most simplest things, but they're huge when you're feeling down. So the way the website works is it asks you a question and then it leads you on a path based on your answer. And so, you know, it'll start and it'll say, have you eaten today? If you say no, it'll say, okay, take 15 minutes and go get yourself something to eat or whatever it says. And then when you're done, you click, okay, I've eaten. And then it takes you to the next self-care step. And it says, have you taken your medication today? And you click, yes, yes, I've taken my medication. It brings you to the next step and it'll suggest drinking some water. You take a sip of your water and you click that you drank your water. Then it says, do you need to rest? Are you feeling tired? You say yes or no. And again, it brings you along your own little path and it suggests things that you should do. So if you're feeling anxious, how to calm yourself feeling anxious. And then you click yes, I did this. You know, are you not comfortable? Maybe you should clean your room. Have you cleaned your room? And it gives you, you know, your time to go clean your room. You come back and you click, I cleaned my room. So it helps you do the things that people who aren't struggling do second nature. And then it will put you on that path to being able to pick out a better outfit instead of putting on your depression uniform. So go to youfeellikeshit.com. And if you haven't done a lot of those things and are listening to this podcast, stop listening to the show, go do some of those things, and then come back and you'll listen to this in a much better frame of mind. On today's show, I have Jordan Harbinger on, who has an amazing show called The Jordan Harbinger Show. He's super creative. And what he does on his show is talk to the most successful people on earth, essentially, to learn strategies and perspectives and insights that they have from being at the top of their game. And then he takes all those practical insights and tells you how to incorporate them into your own life. It's like a life building podcast. It's a really good show. So Jordan is on talking about losing part of his business and rebuilding it. But he has so many interesting things to talk about in terms of technology when it comes to depression and mental health and like things they're coming up with. So if we have kids, they'll probably be depressed and then they'll have great technology. But Jordan knows all about that kind of stuff. So that's coming right up. But of course, before we get to it, please, please put your hands together for the new Patreon cult members, Brett M. and John B. Thank you so much for coming to Patreon. I need the support and appreciate it more than you guys will ever know. So if you want to go to Patreon and support me and the show, it would be amazing. Please go to patreon.com/mentallychill. And I'll be doing a live stream again Wednesday, October 10th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. And you can come join on there on Patreon and ask me questions and hang out with me live. And again, that's Wednesday, October 10th on Patreon. patreon.com/mentallychill at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Don't miss it. All it takes is a dollar or two to join Patreon. So if the show brings anything to your life, please, please, please do that. And thank you to everyone who's been rating and commenting. It makes a huge difference in the success of the show. If you have 2 seconds, all you do is go to iTunes, click 5 stars, and move on with your day. Or you can take a few more minutes and write a little review as well. That warms my broken heart. So thank you to everyone who has done that. And I would love to get to, I'm at 370 reviews right now, or 72 reviews. I'd love to get from 372 to 500 by Christmas. Can all you guys do that for me? That'd be my Christmas present. Please, please, please. That would be so amazing. And this week's show disclaimer, Jordan and I taped remotely. It's the first time I've ever done Mentally Chill without the other person in the room. Don't love it. Not my favorite. Not going to do it often, but I had to do it. I'm in the middle of nowhere at my parents'. Jordan's all the way in California where all the special people live. So we did it over the internet. Something went wrong with my mic. So I sound terrible. I had to use the mic that Stevie gave me and plug it into the computer. And something happened where it just, the first 30 seconds were fine. And then it went terribly wrong. And I couldn't hear it because it was recording into the program and not into my ears. So I had no idea that I sounded like I was in a tunnel. So, and my laptop is a MacBook, and it's one that Apple designed without a USB port. So you have to connect USBs through your charging port. So I ran out of charge. So the show right at the end cuts off. So I awkwardly run in at the end on my own and do the finishing line. So that's what that is. But anyway, that's all of the disclaimers I have for this week. And I hope you're all doing well. And here is Jordan. Rebuilding, I think, is something that a lot of people have to do in their lives. And I know right now my life is essentially the site of a demolition. I no longer live in Los Angeles. I'm trying to transition to New York. I've had a couple things go really poorly. And so I'm kind of starting my life at ground zero. And I know that you went through something similar-ish recently with your business. So I wanted to talk to you about getting yourself back on your feet when things are looking pretty shitty.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I haven't talked much about this on my own show because when I started my, when I had to restart my show, The Jordan Harbinger Show, from scratch because of like crappy, crazy people that I used to work with, I was not sure if it was a good idea to be like, here's all this bad stuff that happened, because I thought, okay, I want my audience to get what they want from me, but it was tough for me to decide what to do because I want to be real and I want to be raw, but I also don't want to be like whining about it the whole time. And I feel like this is just a total microcosm of what depressed or sad people go through all the time because they have to balance that, right?
Well, it's interesting because we actually have the polar opposite situation. On your show, you are strong and don't want to wallow in the negative, whereas on my show, I just am weak and wallow in the negative. Does that make sense?
I think so. Yeah. I had to be kind of careful because I don't want to do that. And in fact, even I noticed this is so weird and gave me new sympathy for people who have real problems like this, because when I restarted, I got a couple 1-star reviews that were like, you need to just move on. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I lost my business. My team has all gotten fired. They're all looking at me like, what happened? AJ, who's a weirdo, uses my last name to piggyback off my brand, who works for my old company, fired. They're like, they fired the whole team. The team's looking at me. I'm now living off of, like, thankfully I had saved a bunch and like been responsible with funds in the past. So I had to rebuild my 11-year-old business from scratch. And I'm a fan of saying action ends suffering, which is one of those trite like bumper stickers that is by no means true in every case. FYI, just in case someone's like about to tattoo that. It's action for me in this case ended suffering. And I think for a lot of people who are unsure about where to go in their life, action ends suffering. Because for me, Kristen, tell me if this makes any sense. I was like have you ever been like an idiot and like run the blender with no top, or like you don't put your hand on the top and you run it and you're like, I'm just going to go over to the kitchen and get something out of the fridge. And you're like, fuck me. It's everywhere.
Well,
now.
I'm still working on just even having the motivation to use a blender. So I haven't gotten to that point, but I'm sure I will get there someday. I'll fuck it up somehow if I get there.
Once you get to the blender and you run it without the top or the top explodes, that's how I felt. I felt like I had all of that energy and I had all of these sort of raw materials, right? Like I was a talk show host for 11 years. I had a lot of show fans. I had a lot of, my team was looking at me ready to start the next thing. I had that going for me, but I had no focus.
Right.
I had to do everything at once. And so it was like a blender with the top off. And people were like, oh, go to Hawaii for 2 weeks and chill. And I was like, oh, you do not know me, do you? Like, go chill. First of all, what does that even mean? And go to Hawaii for 2 weeks and chill. Like, what planet are you on where you just do yoga all day and everything's great?
You obviously are in California.
Yeah. Yeah. People were like, go do yoga for 2 weeks. And yeah. I was like, I like you, so I don't want to punch you in the face. But really what I'm visualizing right now is me being like, bah-dah, like right to the throat. Because what are you talking about? That is not how I'm going to get through this. And it wasn't that those people even gave like bad advice or were like uncaring. That was really what would have worked for them, I'm sure. But for me, there was a 0% chance that was going to happen. But I needed to do something to get rid of the angst. I was not sleeping. I felt like crap because I wasn't sleeping. That there's no better way, by the way, to ensure your depression lasts than to like stay up all night with an anxiety issue. And that happened for a couple of days. So that, by the way, I'll tell you, massive newfound compassion for people who are like, yeah, I have insomnia, or yeah, I have anxiety issues. Because here's what normal people think when they hear this. They think, oh, you're nervous about your exams or something. Like, we've all been through that. When I now think of what people must say when they have an anxiety, quote unquote, disorder, if it's anything even like not being able to sleep, waking up at 2 a.m. after falling asleep for like 2 hours and then being like, not knowing why you're freaking out about something or whatever, I bow down to your level of resilience if you're still going through that on a daily basis or weekly basis even. It's the worst.
Oh, it's so
feeling.
It's so bad. And earlier before we taped your show that I did, I genuinely was in my bed curled up because of the anxiety, because I felt really out of my element doing your show, because normally I don't talk professionally or I don't give actionable advice in my normal life. And that had me paralyzed. And whenever I do stand up, I get the same paralyzing anxiety where I literally, the only thing I can do is lay down in a ball. And I need to, it's like, I'm not laying and enjoying being horizontal. I am laying trying to get through this panic that I'm experiencing, because if I'm standing up going through it, it's just going to be worse. So And my anxiety has gotten worse as the years have gone on. I wasn't always like this, but I do live with it now pretty much on an almost daily basis. And it is so mentally exhausting. It's like when you're depressed, you feel dead. But when you're depressed with anxiety, you feel dead, but then your corpse just drank too much coffee. It's a really weird, awful feeling. So not that I'm glad that you experienced it, but I'm glad that you have a better, you know, it opened your mind up. It's almost like waiting tables. People don't understand how bad it is to wait tables. And I feel like everyone should do it so they can get some compassion for their server when they're taking away pennies from their tip for not, you know, being there right away. So it's like you have a better understanding now, so you can, you know, go forward into the world and be compassionate.
You know what? It's funny you say I'm not glad that you went through it. There's a part of me, and it's not a small part, that is actually quite glad that I went through it. Because I'll tell you, in the whole thing, not just the anxiety thing has given me a lot more compassion for a lot of other people. It has given me a newfound appreciation for having a stable lifestyle, being away from negative, terrible people like the people I used to work with has been awesome. It's not even people. It's just one person. Let's be frank. I'm trying to group them together, but there's only one person. To be even in a group of people where more than one is like that, I feel like is quite rare, unless it's your family and it's all like, you know, sort of like married together in that way. Yeah. But the other thing that's great about it is not only is this working out for the better and something I should have done a long time ago, something, frankly, I never would have had the guts to do, Kristen. I never would have had the guts to pull the ripcord on my old company and start something new because the getting was too good. And I would have had kids, and then I would have been in this situation where these a-holes do the same thing, and then I'm dealing with it, but I have two kids, and my wife is taking care of them full-time, and I don't have her as my, like, right-hand man. Because my wife is my second-in-command over here, and she's a butt-kicker. Big time. And she's super capable and gets it done. And so we're crushing it in large part because we cut those anchors loose from our lives. And it was, the timing couldn't have been better. The only way the timing could have been better is if we just did it earlier, frankly, but I was not ready to do it then. It's kind of one of those, like, if I were religious, I'd be like, this is God testing me. I'm not at all. So sorry if I just made fun of you for being religious, but it's one of those, the universe is testing me. How's that for California? So
you have a power through it mentality. I have a put my tail between my legs and roll up in a ball mentality. Do you think I had experiences as a kid, or I was just born this way? Or
I think some of it's genetic. I think some of it is for sure nature and nurture, you know, like, so nature, genetic, nurture, how we're raised. There is probably a lot more of a genetic component to this than people think. And I'm telling you, and I said this on my show, I said this on the Jordan Harbinger show when you and I were talking just a few minutes ago, I said, I guarantee you, I think I said 100 years, but honestly, it's going to be like 20 or 30 years. We're going to see from once we find fMRI, do you know what fMRI is? Like, so you know what an MRI is?
Yeah, I'm a doctor.
You go in that big ass medical tube and they can brain scan you. Scan your brain. I don't know why I said brain scan you. They scan your brain. fMRI is functional MRI. So it's kind of like, instead of an x-ray, imagine if you had like a real-time picture of your brain doing what it's doing. Obviously, x-rays look at bones that are pretty boring. They don't do a whole lot that you can see visually. But your brain, it can, you know, you can scan a brain and go, oh, this person just got the fight or flight instinct triggered by this thing that they saw, because we can see that they're prefrontal cortex or with like their lizard brain, you know, like this hippocampus is doing that because of this other thing. Like, you can see all of these different images in the brain. Well, imaging technology, and this is an aside, and I promise to keep it short, imaging technology is getting to the point where fMRI, yes, it's in those giant tubes, but we're looking at within the next like 8 to 10 years, depending on how things go with tech, will be wearable.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. And when you can fit that giant magnet tube and it's wearable and it transmits via Bluetooth 7 or whatever standard we've got at that time to your iPhone 25 or whatever we've got at that time, you're going to be able to see your own brain in real time. And that's going to get crowdsourced data to places like Google, Apple, and other startups that you haven't even heard of yet. And they're going to find, mark my words, they're going to find genetic and environmental factors that when combined cause depression. And it's going to be something painfully obvious, like how much screen time someone has combined with mm-hmm. this gene, or how like someone's circadian rhythm combined with the fact that their job makes them get up at a certain time so they don't get enough sleep, so their REM sleep is lower, so dot, 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 causing depression. We're going to find crazy amounts of causes. And the way that I know this is because remember when people died of cancer in the 50s and they died of like generic whatever, or they died of like some disease that they don't call it that anymore because that's not what it is. That was 60 years ago. The people who were born then are still alive and well. This is our parents' generation, really. They have so much more of an idea of what causes cancer. There are posters, my buddy's got some, where cigarettes are marketed as a health cure. Okay.
I wish I lived then.
And that's,
oh, yes. I really just wish I lived then, because I love being ignorant sometimes. Like, I love not knowing.
Oh hell yeah. I was talking with Adam Carolla, our mutual friend, and I can't remember how this came up, but it was like, when was the best time to be alive? And he goes, mid-COVID, pre-AIDS. And I was like, oh, definitely, like, good call.
Of course.
Yeah, because you're ignorant of AIDS and you're like, cocaine, yeah, it's good for you and it's cheap now. I guess it probably wasn't cheap until the 80s or the late 80s, but still, you know, there. If you were rich, mid-coke, pre-AIDS, man. Hollywood in the early 80s must have been the shit, but I digress. You know, they're going to find that things like that, because we know that depression is brain chemistry, right? Whereas in the 80s, it was like, you're lazy, right? What's wrong with you? Think positive. Go listen to this tape from Zig Ziglar that I got, right? Like, that was depression. Now, I guarantee you we're going to find that it is actually a disease. It's caused by environmental and genetic factors, and we're going to be able to pinpoint what those are. And like I said, it's going to be super freaking obvious. Like, your exposure to this causes it to activate. Certain people are predisposed to it. It's really clear. That's why it runs in people's families. It's genetic, but epigenetics, which means that what the environment says about which genes get expressed, that is something that's different for everyone. So you and I, we're going to be able to see our DNA right there. And it's going to be like, oh, Kristen's a pretty girl and Jordan's like a nerdy guy, but everything else is pretty much the same. And they're going to look at that depression thing and you're going to see that mine is right there and yours is right there, except for you grew up near freaking power lines or whatever. And like, that fucked everything up. I guarantee you it's going to be stuff like that. Probably not as simple as power lines, but it's going to be something along those lines. Medication combined with the way that you grew up, combined with your DNA. And once we can sort of isolate those things, we're going to realize that this is something that can be treated effectively, that doesn't require drugs that make you also feel like shit or like make you shit yourself or all these other horrible side effects that antidepressants
have. Yeah, we're
have.
Kind of living in the like 1890s of depression mm-hmm. in a way, you know, in terms of
yeah.
treatment.
Yeah. I don't know when the Black Plague was. I assume it was well before the 1890s. But remember when, you read these books in high school probably, where it's like, he had the bubonic plague, so he was doing bloodletting, where he was like cutting himself and letting all the blood run out. It's like, obviously terrible for you. There's no medical benefit to this. And like, one guy tried it and survived, and they're like, this is a cure now. We're in that mode, where we're like, hey, we have these pills that sort of make you feel good for a second, and they're made by a pharmaceutical company, so they can't be that bad. And everyone's like, cool, let's distribute these to children all over the world or all over the US. And now I think the jig is up on that one, right? Like, people now know, like, hey, this is terrible.
Yeah,
for you.
Well, I always think about people who were the first to be willing to fly commercially and just get on a plane in the 1940s or something, or whenever they first started flying commercial. Those people were really fucking ballsy. And I feel like that's kind of now with the treatments for mental health and depression, not completely, but we're kind of just, we think this is a lot of technology, but we have no idea, like the airplanes of the 1940s, like being made out of wood, not that they were flying those commercially, but like, someone was willing to get in that. I would have never, I can barely fly in 2018 comfortably, let alone in 1940. But I think people will look back on this time the way I look at flying in the 40s with mental health. Like, they'll go, oh my God, imagine in 2018 and people were getting magnets put on their brain. And because there's, you know, TMS treatment, which is transcranial magnetic stimulation. And I feel like that's going to look so like dungeony in 50 years.
Of course. Of course, it just like, I mean, look at the, even the previous example, MRI and fMRI, those gigantic tube things that you have to crawl into. It's going to be like when you look at old pictures of computers and it's like the entire room. And in order to use it, you had to unplug like a record player headphone cable and plug it into another part of this metal dashboard with 8,000 holes in it. And all it could do was math.
Right.
And it didn't have a screen. It had to print everything. Like, that's where we're at with brain imaging. That's where we're at with mental illness in general, especially things like depression. And yet it's this epidemic we are completely unprepared for. It is worse than any other disease. And I'm saying this is unqualified, of course, but this is worse than any other sort of single disease. Like, AIDS was really scary because it was like, what's causing it? Oh my God, this is terrible. Depression should be more scary than that because it gets people from Anthony Bourdain to the random homeless guy that's on your block that, you know, screwed up his life because of drug addiction and things like that and is down and out. Like, that, this doesn't care if you're rich. It doesn't care if you're famous. It doesn't care if you have the best life ever and everyone's jealous of you. You kind of just wake up one day and you're like, I hate everything. And it's hard to cope with that. And nobody can fucking help you.
Right.
Apparently. Well, that's not true. I don't mean that, honestly. I don't mean that. I want to make sure that I don't say
no,
like,
but
nobody can
help you.
It's
when,
totally
when something's
not true.
A medical, more less of an emotional problem and more of a medical one, you have people that can help you. You go to this place and they give you this treatment. Whereas, you know, depression, it is like people can help you, but it's much more difficult for people to help you.
Yeah.
Well, there was this device that I heard about like last year, and I don't know much about it, but because you're talking about the MRI machines being so big and massive, but there was this guy who worked with golfers. And they wore headsets that monitored their thoughts or something to help them become better golfers. Have you heard of that at all? I have no idea what the name.
No, I mean, it sounds like something that, since we don't have fMRI that's wearable yet, it was probably something that measures, I mean, some kind of brainwaves. It's really hard to tell. I had a headband a while ago. This is like low-end consumer levels called Muse, and it was supposed to help you meditate. Hmm. And it basically, it's an app that, for your phone, it had like sound effects like waves or birds chirping or a thunderstorm. And if you were really calm and just focused on your breathing, it was birds chirping and it was like nice waves. And if your mind was racing, somehow this thing knew, this $300 headband knew, and would start playing the thunderstorm so that you had an auditory cue to get back to it. It's probably something along those lines where, like, if you're really focused and in the zone, it knows and probably doesn't play any cues because you're golfing. You don't want that crap. But then later on when you had a golf game, it would be like, oh, you had a great game. And it's like, wow, this guy was in the zone on every hole, right? It's probably just timed. I'm guessing that's what that is. And that technology is getting to the point where for a couple $100, you can just wear that. It's small. So imagine what in 5-10 years, the latest and greatest medical tech is going to be. It's going to be like a stick-on wireless thing that you can wear all day. And then it'll transmit via Bluetooth to your stinking phone. I mean, that's basically what it is already. It'll just be able to do more.
Yeah. I posted on my Patreon page a video that this artist had done with these vibration pools. And she had an EEG headset that monitored her brainwaves. And then they were attached to these pools of water. So you could see certain pools vibrating and the water splashing up and down based on her thoughts. And so, you know, I know it's like a very rudimentary example of that because it's just like the EEG headset. But I definitely think that what you're saying is so likely down the road. But I also am like, all the screenshots we're going to see on people's apps and like posted to Instagram of, oh, look at my brain today. It's going to be annoying.
Yeah. Oh, my brain. Oh, the hippocampus is so crazy.
You Photoshopped that hippocampus.
Yeah. No one's hippocampus is that big.
No. Yeah. She totally got a surgery for that one.
Gross.
Well, that's so cool. And I'm curious how you find out about those things. Is it from the people that you talk to on your show that enlighten you to that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think it really is. Yeah, I'll talk to some scientists and they're like, hey, check this out. Or I'll read a book about the brain because I'm interviewing that scientist. And then they're in that book. It's like, yeah, here's what we're working on. Plus, when I have a chance to interview some of these amazing people, I often say, you know, I'll interview somebody who's doing imaging for brain scans and I'll be like, what's the future? And some of this stuff is straight up scary. I had Mary Lou Jepsen on the show. It was a cross interview, and she was at Facebook. She moved over to, I want to say, damn it, like Google, I think. I'm not sure. And she does brain imaging for them. And she's talking about how you're going to be able to wear something that can image your brain so well. Right now, it's kind of like X-ray, where we have to shoot something all the way through the brain, and then we can see kind of what's on the other side. And it takes a while, and it's kind of like a blunt instrument. But pretty soon they're going to be able to get super granular, almost molecular with it, which means they'll be able to map synapses of brains. Just like we map the human genome, we'll be able to sort of map the brain, at which point we'll be able, AI, computers especially, will be able to eventually read dreams and things like that. Which, if you can read dreams, you can read minds. So it gets a little scary, because imagine once you don't need to wear it and it's something that you can like aim at people. Yeah. Like, I don't know. You go down the sci-fi rabbit hole and it's pretty creepy. Or like, imagine you're being interrogated. They no longer need to ask you questions. They can literally just.
Oh my God. So if you're
going to
be a criminal, be one now. Don't be one in the future.
Never been a better
time. Okay. Well, I want to get to some of these segments. And so I'm going to start with antidepressant of the week. Do you have anything that you did this week that made you feel good or made you feel alive?
Yeah. Recently, what have I done that's made me feel good and made me feel alive? I mean, honestly, I go work out all the time because I feel like I have to, not because I'm like, yeah, I get swole. I really feel like it is a huge
help. Well, yeah,
you looked
great. The last time I saw you, you said you lost like 15 pounds or something like that.
Yeah, like 20, 25 pounds. Honestly, it's like the stress diet or whatever. But I like working out. I actually, this sounds so boring, but I walk outside a lot and I use audiobooks. So I read audiobooks a lot, because people are always like, how do you read so much? You just sit inside and read. I just pop on headphones and I walk around my neighborhood. You know, you're getting sun because where I live, it's really sunny in California. If you don't live in a place where you can get sun, I recommend go to the gym and stand on one of those treadmills and just walk slowly while you read. It's not hard work. It's not hard exercise. You'll plow through books that are interesting, podcasts that are interesting, and you'll find that you're getting miles in. And those endorphins, this is not news to anybody, but even a little endorphin boost on a stressful day or a day where you feel like crap is magical.
Yeah, you know what I did recently, which I had never done before, but I did a headstand, and I'd never even known that I could do a headstand. I think when I was a kid, I'd try and I'd fall. But the other day I needed to snap myself out of whatever mindset I was in. And so I just threw a pillow on the floor and I went up against the wall and I was like, can I do headstands? All of a sudden I realized I didn't need the wall and I'm like a headstand pro. And when I actually the next day I woke up with broken blood vessels because I was doing them for so long, but it felt so good because I think almost just like tipping the way my blood was draining or something, you know, it felt amazing. And so it was just that change, not endorphins. I don't know if I really worked up endorphins from it, but it was that change all of a sudden in my brain from doing something completely different with my body that I've never really done before.
I think that's underrated. Yeah. You know, I think that, and that's why people say like, oh, go do yoga or whatever. I don't like yoga. It's not really for me, but there's something about going into an unfamiliar movement or an unfamiliar place and just getting some novelty that snaps your brain out of the funk a little bit. Cause people think like go to the gym and they're like, oh dude, I don't want to go like sweat and work out and barf. And it's like, dude, if you just go there and you do the easy bike, the easy elliptical, the easy treadmill, you curl 20 pounds 10 times for 3 sets, like not even breaking a sweat type stuff. For a guy, I guess. For women, you can do stretching, like maybe not curl 20 pounds.
Maybe you can curl
40 pounds.
Yeah, I can curl you if
you
I want to.
You can. But I think the thing is what people say, what people hear when people say go to the gym is they're like, they think you're like going and doing like barfing CrossFit workouts with like 87 pull-ups. And it's just not that. I mean, just walking 5,000 steps outside, which sounds like a lot, but is really like just a couple of blocks, frankly, while listening to a book it can be a game changer for me when I feel like crap. Like after this, I feel pretty good having this conversation, but I know that I'm getting this like antsy feeling that I've had like all day, and I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to have kind of a mediocre-ish workout, and it's going to change the entire rest of my day. It always does.
Yeah, I think it's about getting out of your head and getting into your body. And I think about that because when I used to take acting classes, I was not the worst, but I wasn't amazing. And I was so in my head. I was so aware of how does my voice sound when I say this word? And is this person looking at me? And is this teacher going to make me embarrassed after him? The amount of thoughts that go through my head. And so my teacher would see that and he'd say, get out of your head and into your body somehow. Like do whatever you need to do to basically reconnect with being in your body. And I think that's what like doing the headstand did. And it feels so primal because it's like we're using our body, even though it's in a minimal way, like you said, walking or whatever. And it's funny, you said people assume when you go to the gym, it's like you're going there and barfing and doing a million sets. I really feel like no one would ever imagine that about me. If I was like, I'm going to the gym, they're probably like, oh yeah, she's probably going to lay on the bench that people lift things on. Like, but yeah, you're right. Get to the gym. It changes your day. It changes your perspective, even if you're not doing much there. And that's my kind of workout.
I love it. I think for people who don't want to work out, and I get that, I think it's necessary to do some kind of creative outlet or have some kind of creative outlet. Maybe you hate physical activity, that's fine. But I think if you are walking and writing, walking and listening, doing anything that doesn't involve sitting for just a little while, like even if you're standing and painting or something, it's just better than being stationary. Your body just doesn't want to be stationary. It really doesn't. And I know that we talked about this on my show where Jane McGonigal hypothesized, I think this might not be her theory, but it might be someone else's. She had a severe concussion and she got really depressed. And one of the things that helped her get out of that a little bit was learning from a doctor or psychologist of some kind that being depressed is actually, and having suicidal thoughts is actually a major side effect, very common side effect of having a concussion. And the reason I think the hypothesis is that what it does is it causes you to isolate yourself and be indoors and safe a lot because your brain is afraid of getting injured again. And that's just a hypothesis, but think about it. If that's what your brain kind of wants, because that's the way you're feeling at the time, short circuiting that by forcing yourself to at least walk around, even if you're not going outside, going to the gym, being seen by other people, even if you're just walking the dog, walking around, walking by yourself, walking around your kitchen island, it's better because that snaps your body into saying, hey, actually, when we go outside and we do stuff, we don't get injured. Yeah. It's okay. It's just a baby step that gets you that much.
Do you have any books specifically that you've read at all on not necessarily depression, but mental health? No pressure if you haven't, but does anything pop into your mind that is either inspiring or helpful for somebody to read?
I have not read books on mental health or depression, but what I did, a book I think that would be well served or that would serve your listeners really well is actually Jane McGonigal's book, Super Better. She talks about how she invented a game to gamify her life because of her concussion injury and her suicidal thoughts and her depression. She turned it into a game because she's a game designer. That's like her thing. And she's a really well-known game designer. And she turned it in her life into a game. And Super Better is a book that explains the quote-unquote rules of the game. And it's the things that you do in the game are just like regular video games. Like you fight bad guys. And what the bad guys are, like bad moods, injuries, depression. The way you do that is by recruiting allies, which is what you do in real life. And she's like, award yourself points for this and award yourself points for that. And like, keep track of this and journal it down. And like, it sounds cheesy, but she's a scientist. She is a scientist and a researcher. She's not a freaking self-help person who's like, you're fine. Just go outside and do jumping jack. Like, that's not what this is. She has designed a game that got her through a very, very serious head injury and depression associated therewith. And so I think Super Better, from Jane McGonigal. It's McGonigal. And she has a sister, Kelly. So if you get confused, like, wait, it's Jane. Super Better. It is a really, in fact, the original name of that game before she started writing a book about it was Jane the Concussion Slayer, I think. But obviously that's not very mass markety of her. So I recommend that. I think that when I read that, I thought, wow, is this useful? And my producer was like just blown away by it. So, and he suffers from a lot of this stuff too.
Where can you play the video game?
It's not an actual video game. It's the rules are the game that you create for yourself.
Oh.
So you're going through your own life and you're like, my allies are Kristen, my other allies, my mom, my other allies, my old roommate. And then like this bad guy for me today is the fact that my boss is being a total dick and like I have a deadline that I'm not going to hit and people are going to be disappointed in me. Like that's my bad guy for today. Like that kind of stuff.
Cool. Well, I think she should make it into an actual video game.
Of course. Yeah. And she, I mean, she, the book is full of really cool research too. One thing I won't bore you with this too much, but one piece that I found that was uber fascinating was there is something called the Tetris effect. And when people saw traumatizing things, like even soldiers in war and EMTs who are responding to terrible disasters, if they played Tetris for, I think it was like 15 minutes after that event, sometime before they went to bed, their PTSD was almost almost completely negated.
Wow.
And the hypothesis is just that this game process helps your brain go into sort of an autopilot mode and processes that stuff a little bit more appropriately than just going to bed and having nightmares about it and then fusing it in during REM sleep and then having it traumatize you.
That's really interesting because I used to have a severe fear of flying and I used to play Tetris essentially the entire flight to keep my mind occupied.
Yeah.
And it felt like it really was my coping mechanism.
It stops rumination. And that's what's really cool about it is you can't ruminate when your brain is occupied. That's why people have so many brilliant ideas like in the shower. They're like, oh my God, because you just connect stuff because your body's kind of busy, you're washing yourself, you don't have other stimuli coming in. There's just enough to sort of take over all of your conscious brain. And then your subconscious brain's like, hey, remember yesterday when you painted that thing and then you had that iPhone thing? What if you mix the painting idea with the iPhone idea? And you're like, oh my God, this is genius, right? That only happens when your default mode network is activated or deactivated. I forget which is which. And so Tetris and things like that, like you have to think about where those bricks are going to line up. So you don't have time to think about like how horrible it was. And you know what? This is a one last practical, and I hate to recommend video games because half of us are addicted already. But when I was going through massive, massive stress in the beginning, starting this company over, starting the Jordan Harbinger show and starting our company Advanced Human Dynamics from scratch, one thing that I literally went out and I bought an Xbox and my wife was like, no, you're going to play video games all the time. I bought a couple games. I played them every day before bed and it was great because not only was I playing a fun game and I played socially with my friends on Xbox Live, which is like the nerdiest thing ever and I love it, but I would go to bed and I'd be like, I'm good. Instead of the hour before bed being like, let me watch the news and think about all the horrible things that are going on in the world and all the horrible things that are probably going to happen to me in the future because I need something to worry about. I was just like, I just killed a bunch of aliens. Good night. It was really, really satisfying.
It was like almost letting your brain go on a run or something before you go to bed.
100%. Yeah, exactly. And it's all these games have these tiny missions that are satisfying. So if you have like 20 minutes, you can play something. You don't have to play for 8 hours like some giant role-playing game. And it's also satisfying enough because if you're not in the mood to figure something out, you just want to blow some shit up.
Yeah, you can almost get out your angst at the same time as stimulate your brain.
Yeah, like there were multiple times where I'm like, okay, I'm in a flamethrower kind of mode, so I'm just going to get a flamethrower and I'm going to run havoc through this farm and light some rednecks on fire. And it's just like, okay, maybe that wasn't super healthy, but they were all bad people and it wasn't real. So I'm going to bed now. Like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think as long as you don't end up doing that 24 hours a day in your parents' basement, I think you're good.
The way I did it was I started to see myself getting a little bit hooked on it and I went, okay, new rule. I'm only going to do this when my producer can play with me and maybe like a maximum of half an hour a day before or after he leaves because I can't always mesh schedules with him. But otherwise, I don't want like marathon sessions where I should be working doing that.
Yeah, because you also still want to like get laid by your wife. You know, like you want to.
Occasionally, that would be great. Yeah, yes, exactly.
Well, all of this was so helpful and so informative and so different than the show normally goes. And so I love it. So thank you for doing this. And I would keep going, but my computer's about to die.
Yeah, that's okay.
So the Jordan Harbinger show, you guys should check it out because I think a lot of people that listen to the show listen for just like the soothing kind of group community quality. But I think if you really want to better yourself and improve yourself, listening to a show like Jordan's is so helpful and so necessary.
Thank you so much. So, this was really fun.
Good. Well, I'm glad you did it. And all right. Well, you guys check out Jordan. And what's your Twitter handle and where can they find you on social media?
At Jordan Harbinger on everything. Twitter, Instagram.
And that's where my computer dies. So make sure to go check out Jordan's show, The Jordan Harbinger Show. And please continue to rate and tell a friend about the show. If you've got a friend, I know I don't have any. But if I did have them, I would tell them all about this show. And you should do the same. And remember, stay sad enough to listen, but not too sad. Bye, guys.